tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground. This is the place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. Good day, everybody. I hope everyone is having a wonderful day despite of what's going on. So, this episode, right, this is going to be a very special episode for me. This episode will be called Axis of Tension, Iran, Israel, and the New World Crisis. That's what we're going to call this episode today, okay? And the things I will be talking about, I got them from a few sources like the New York Post, Politico, Cybersecurity Drive, the Wall Street Journal, the Guardian, and so on. Okay, so as we all know by now, y'all saw what happened when Israel attacked Iran. We saw what happened when that happened, right? The whole world was watching. And for some reason, I was just thinking, you know, how long had these two countries been in conflict? For some reason, I really would have thought they was in conflict for like maybe over 1,000 years or something like that. But I was wrong. But later on, we're going to really get into that when they really started the confliction. Okay? Because at one time, Israel and Iraq was actual allies. Can you believe that? You know what I mean? In my lifetime, I never knew that these two countries were allies, okay? But let's get started with our topic today, okay? So, this is going to be the history of Iran and Israel, from allies to adversaries. Okay, so let's get started, right? So now this is the founding of the modern states, okay? So Israel, the birth of a Jewish state, was born on May 14th, 1948. Okay? So the Israel that we know of today is not the Israel that you learn about in the Bible, okay? This is a whole new Israel that we learn, okay? So after the horrors of the Holocaust and growing global sympathy for the Jewish people, the Zionist movement pushed for a homeland in historic Palestine. So on May 14, 1948, David Ben-Gurion declared the establishment of the State of Israel, fulfilling a decade-long dream for Jews around the world. This moment marked the reestablishment of Jewish sovereignty after nearly 2,000 years. Think about it, right? After 2,000 years, we didn't really hear nothing about Israel until 1948. Man, when I was reading about this, I'm like, ooh, interesting. You know what I mean? So Israel is practically a young country. It's a very young country. So now the UN partition plan war with Arab neighbors, right? So the plan war with the Arab neighbors. So before Israel was founded, the United Nations proposed a partition plan in 1947 to divide the British-controlled Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Jewish community accepted the plan. So the Jewish community wanted to go along with both states together as one, right? So the Arab leaders rejected this idea. The day after Israel declared independence, five Arab countries, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, invaded. So this sparked the 1948 Israelite War, also known in Israel as the War of Independence, and the Palestinian at the Nakba catastrophe due to the mass displacement of the Palestinians. So as time went on, right? So before all that, so the global reaction and recognitions, right? So back then too, the United States and the Soviet Union. Can you believe at one point the United States and the Soviet Union was actually close, was cool at one point? Can you really believe that? So they were among the first to recognize Israel. While many Western countries quickly followed, Arab and Muslim majority countries refused to cite solidarity with the Palestinians. Israel's international legitimacy was always contested in the Arab world, right? So the Arab people were like, these people ain't real, you know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna be part of this nonsense, right? Basically, that's what the Arab people would say. I ain't trying to be a part of this, okay? You know what I mean? Let me be, let us do our own thing, right? So now, Iran under the Shah, one of the first Muslim nations to unofficially acknowledge Israel. So at one point, Iran was one of the first countries, right, the Muslim country, to actually acknowledge Israel, right? So surprisingly, Iran under Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi maintained quiet unofficial ties with Israel. So it was unofficial, but it was cool together. You understand me? They were real cool, and they probably back then probably do a lot of trade agreements and all that great things that was going on, right? So, though it didn't establish a full diplomatic relations, Iran sold oil to Israel, just like I just said. You know what I'm saying? Who were working together to help each other out. So they engaged in intelligence cooperation and hosted Israelis business advisors. The Shah viewed Israel as a valuable ally against Arab nationalism and Soviet influence, both of which threatened Iran's regional ambition. Okay, so that was at the time how Israel became to be, right? So now, Iran. Okay, so Iran has a long imperial history, modern foundation under Reza Shah. So Reza Shah, you know what I mean, founded modern Iran back in 1925. So think about it, right? Basically, Iran under Reza Shah is 100 years old right now. 100 years old. You know what I mean? When you think about a lot of these countries, right? Whether you agree with how they operate, how the government operates things, a lot of these countries has a lot of great history, though. I'm talking going back thousands of years. Okay? So Iran has one of the world's oldest, just like I said, oldest continuous civilizations with roots stretching back thousands of years to the Persian Empire. However, the modern nation state of Iran was established in 1925 when Reza Shah Pahlavi overthrew the Qajar dynasty and founded the Pahlavi dynasty. He centralized power, suppressed tribal revolts, and began a campaign of secular nationalism, separating religion from politics. Think about it, right? They actually separated the religion from politics, right? And to be honest with you, that's how it really should be, right? We should never mix religion and politics, okay? Never, all right? It would never work out good for some people when you do that. So the rise of Pahlavi dynasty and modernization efforts. Reza Shah and later his son, Muhammad Reza Shah, pursued aggressive modernization. They built roads, railways, schools, and universities. The monarchy pushed to westernize Iran's legal system, clothing and education, right? So women gained more public rights. Damn. So you're trying to tell me back then women had more rights than they do today? Oh, man. However, this was paired with political repression. The Shah maintained control through a brutal secret police force, Savak. So that was the name of the police force, and they were very brutal back then. And dissent was often crushed. And dissent, right? And opposition was often crushed. So now, in 1979, the Islamic Revolution overthrew overthrow the Shah. So the Shah, by this time now, the Shah probably been in power for over 50 some years, right? So the Ayatollah, Khomeini takes over. The Ayatollah, Khomeini takes over. Despite economic progress, resentment grew due to the authoritarian rule. Western influence, corruption, and the marginalization of Islamic traditions, right? So at that time, they started modernizing how they're going to start preaching and stuff like that. So in 1979, mass protests led to the fall of the Shah, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, a religious cleric exiled in France. Return to Iran led to the establishment of an Islamic republic. This revolution marked a total reversal of Iran's previous foreign policy. It became fiercely anti-American, anti-Israel, and started exporting its revolutionary ideals across the Muslim world. So back in those days, right, those countries now at that time started to become anti-American and anti-Israel. So let me tell you something before I move on. Just last night, I was watching CNN, Abby Phillips, and they had, of course, her panel on her show, and Joy Reid was on there. And one thing she said, though, like those countries started becoming enemies of America because it seemed like America always want to be the world's savior. I always want to be in other people's business, right? So tell me what y'all think. Do you think that's true? So back then, around in the 70s, that's when like Iran started to become enemies, basically enemies of the state, right? So because you know what I mean, they don't like how America is, and they always wanted to destroy the American way of life. Okay, so now the golden years from 1948. So Iran and Israel, unlikely allies, right? So this is from 1948 until 1979. Although Israel was a Jewish state surrounded by hostile Arab neighbors and Iran was majority Muslim country, the two found common strategic interests, especially under the Shah's rule. During this time, Iran didn't share the same ideological or religious hostility toward Israel that many Arab nations did. Instead, Iran was focused on economic growth, Western alignment, and countering Arab nationalism. This made Israel a convenient behind-the-scenes partner. So, common enemies, right? So, Arab nationalism, especially Egypt, Nasser. In the 1950s and 60s, Arab nationalism, a secular pan-Arab political movement, was rising, led by Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt. Nasser opposed both Western influence and the existence of Israel, calling for its destruction. He also threatened Iran's regional ambitions. Both Israel and Iran view Arab nationalism as a destabilization force that needed to be contained. In short, the enemy of the enemy became my friend. Think about it. You might be my dead enemy, right? I might not like you too much. But at the same time, though, you don't like this group of people right here. Right? So we might not like each other, but we both don't like this group of people. So guess what we're going to do? We're going to stick together to get rid of these people, right? We can become enemies later. But for now, we need to become allies, okay? That's how basically it is, right? So the back channel diplomacy and shared interests. You know what I mean? Like Charlemagne always says, right? They're never permanent friends, but always permanent interests, which is so true, right? So since Iran couldn't openly recognize Israel without facing backlash from the broader Muslim world, the two countries operated through covert diplomacy, right? They set up informal communications, channeled through embassies in neutral countries like Switzerland and Turkey. Israeli and Iranian officials would meet secretly to discuss trade, intelligence, and strategic issues. These backdoor alliances were essential to preserving their mutual interests while avoiding public controversy, right? So they know if they come up publicly and say, no, we're so cool. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you're my homie, man. I like how we might not agree on every damn thing, but guess what? We can really work together. You know what I mean? But they don't want to do it publicly because, of course, especially the Muslim nations, right? Especially in Iran, they can face a lot of backlash. So now, military and intelligence cooperation. Mossad and SAVAK, right? So Israel's Mossad, Foreign Intelligence Agency, and Iran's SAVAK, Secret Police under the Shah, had a strong working relationship. Mossad helped train SAVAK agents in surveillance and counterintelligence. They shared intel about shared secrets, like Soviet-backed movements of Arab militaries, and sometimes coordinated regional strategies. This intelligence partnership strengthened their alliance and gave both nations an edge against common enemies, right? So they actually look out for each other, just in case if other enemies want to attack, right? So now the oil trade and the tech transfers. So, Iran, rich in oil, sold it to Israel, often routed through third-party countries to avoid political backlash. This trade was crucial because Israel, isolated by its Arab neighbors, couldn't access energy supplies from the region. In return, Israel offered Iran advanced agricultural technology, military training, and infrastructure expertise, which supported the Shah's modernization effort, right? So, Israeli development experts in Iranian agriculture and infrastructure. Israeli specialists were invited to Iran to help develop irrigation systems, framing techniques, and water infrastructures, particularly in arid regions. At the time, Israeli had pioneered advanced water saving techniques, and Iran was eager to modernize its rural secrets. These efforts not only helped Iran's economy, but deepened the bond between the two nations beyond politics into practical civilian cooperation. Okay, so now, that was all fine and dandy, right? They were fine and dandy. They were so cool for those so many years, right? So now, the break happened in 1979 when they started disliking each other. I don't like each other at all. Just like I said on the top of the show, that I really thought they used to have conflicts. There were conflicts for like over like thousands of years. But that's not the case. I was wrong until I did my research, right? They really became enemies in 1979. So in 1979, the Islamic Revolution drastically shifts Iran's ideology. In 1979, a massive grassroots revolution driven by a mix of religious fervor, anti-imperialist anger, and frustrations with the Shah authoritarian rule overthrew the Pahlavi monarchy. It wasn't just a political shift, it was an ideological overhaul. Iran went from a secular monarchy aligned with the West to the Islamic theocracy under Ayatollah Khomeini. The revolution rejected Western influence and sought to replace it with Islamic governance. This immediately created ideological conflict with Israel, a democratic Western ally in the Middle East. So let me repeat that. This immediately created ideological conflict with Israel, a democratic Western ally in the Middle East. So communist theocratic vision, anti-Western and anti-Israel, because you know Israel is aligned with the Western part of the world. So Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the new supreme leader of Iran, built his vision on anti-Western, anti-imperialist, and anti-Zionist rhetoric. He referred to the U.S. as the great Satan and Israel as the little Satan. Khomeini saw Israel as a colonial creation of the West and a symbol of oppression against Muslims. His government openly declared that Israel had no right to exist and called for its destruction. This wasn't just a rhetoric, it became a core principle of Iran's policy. So for what? Over 40-something years, damn near almost 50 years, these two nations became mortal enemies because of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. Okay? He didn't like the Western way of life. Right? He didn't like how we operate. So, right? So he wanted death to Israel, okay? So now, at that time, Iran seized all diplomatic ties with Israel, right? Like, you know what, though? I'm the new leader. I'm the new regime. I want nothing to do with Israel no more, okay? All right? I'm gonna cut all ties from you. We ain't gotta trade nothing. We don't have to be friends. Now we are mortal enemies. That's what they're talking about, mortal enemies, right? As one of his first foreign policy act after the revolution, Iran completely cut ties with Israel, right? Embassies were closed, all previous cooperation was canceled, and the Israeli mission in Tehran was turned over to the Palestine Liberation Organization. Iran now positioned itself as the leader of the resistance, axis in the Muslim world, actively opposing Israel on every front. So, begin supporting militant groups like Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad. To back its anti-Israel ideology with action, Iran began funding and arming militant groups that oppose Israel. Hezbollah, based in Lebanon, was created in the early 1980s with Iranian Revolution Guard support. It became Iran's most powerful proxy, regularly launching attacks on Israel and becoming a dominant political military force in Lebanon. So Islamic Jihad and later Hamas in the Palestinian territories also received Iranian funding, weapons, and ideological backing. Through these groups, Iran waged a proxy war against Israel, destabilizing the region without engaging in direct military conflicts. So Iran been attacking Israel for the past 40-some years. So, right, in this part, so now, from Cold War to proxy war, 1980s to present, Iran's sponsorship of Hezbollah, Lebanon, Hamas, Palestine, militia in Iraq, Syria. Since the early 1980s, Iran has used proxy groups to extend its influence and pressure Israel without engaging in direct war. Yeah. So Iran used proxy groups, right? Because they don't want to just engage in direct war, but they use other people to do their bidding, right? So don't you think that's kind of a punk way out, to be honest with you? So Hezbollah formed in 1982 during Israel's invasion of Lebanon. Hezbollah was created and trained by Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps. It became Iran's most powerful proxy force, armed with thousands of rockets aimed at Israel and deeply embedded in Lebanon politics. Hamas, right? Those Sunni, Hamas has received financial and military support from Shiite Iran. This alliance is strategic, both oppose Israel's existence. Iran helped fund Hamas's rockets, arsenal, and tunnels in Gaza. So Iran has been supporting a lot of these terrorist groups for many, many, many years. Iraq and Syrian militias, right? Iran backs Shiite militias like Kataib Hezbollah in Iraq and various groups in Syria. These militias not only fight ISIS, but also serve Iran's strategic goals, creating land corridors from Tehran to Lebanon, giving Iran a physical route to Israel's border. Israel preemptive strikes in Syria against Iranian convoys. As Iran tried to build a military infrastructure in a war from Syria, Israel responded with hundreds of airstrikes, targeting weapons and convoys, missiles, factories, and command centers, many of them operated by Iran or Hezbollah. These strikes are part of Israel's campaign between wars, which aims to prevent Iran from establishing a permanent military presence in Syria. Israel rarely confirms these strikes officially, but they're widely reported and seen as necessary for national security. Cyber warfare, right? Escalates. So in 2010, a joint U.S.-Israeli cyber attack unleashed the Stuxnet virus on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. The virus destroyed over 1,000 centrifuges used for uranium enrichment, delaying Iran's nuclear program by years. This marked the first known cyber weapon to cause physical destruction. Since then, cyber warfare has become a routine. Iran has launched cyber attacks on Israeli infrastructure, water system, and private companies. Israel has targeted Iranian military and nuclear systems through digital sabotage. It's a silent but powerful front on their ongoing conflicts. So, the assassination campaigns, right? Iran blames Mossad for killing its nuclear scientists. Iran has accused Israel's Mossad of assassinating several key nuclear scientists, right? Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, hopefully I pronounced the name right. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, considered the father of Iran's nuclear program, was killed in 2020 in what Iran said was a Mossad operations using a remote control machine gun. Other scientists were killed in car bombings or drive-by shootings through the mid-2000s. Damn, drive-by, wow. These killings are widely believed to be targeted attempted to delay Iran's nuclear progress. Israel neither confirmed nor denied involvement, but the message is clear. Israel will act unilaterally to stop Iran from going nuclear. So, Iran refers to Israel as a cancerous tumor. Israel sees Iran as existential threat. The rhetoric between both nations is extreme, deeply hostile. Iran's leaders, especially Supreme Leader Khamenei, have called Israel a cancerous tumor that must be removed. That must be removed. This is not just a metaphorical. This is not just metaphorical. It signals a commitment to Israel's destruction. Israel, in turn, sees Iran not just a geopolitical rival, but as an existential threat, especially if Iran obtains nuclear weapons. Israeli leaders across all political lines have said they will never allow a nuclear Iran, even if it means going to war. Hear that? Let me read that again. Israel, in turn, sees Iran not just a geopolitical rival, but as an existential threat, especially if Iran obtains nuclear weapons. Israeli leaders across all political lines have said they will never allow a nuclear Iran, even if it means goes to war, right? So let me ask this question. So these countries, these states, even America, right, said they're not going to have this country to have a nuclear weapon. But yet, we have nuclear weapon, right? And I guarantee Israel has nuclear weapon. And now, what country in the whole entire world, in the whole world history, has dropped nuclear bombs on a country, right? The United States of America. Only country has ever done it, and it did it twice. So don't you think that's a little bit hypocritical to say, you know what I mean? Because Iran, their leader might be unhinged, but think about it, right? In America, we've had some unhinged leaders in the White House. You understand me? And some of those damn people, if you get slightly pissed off, they can bomb any country they want to. They can do all that crap. You know what I mean? But yet you want to stop this country from having nuclear weapons. But how about y'all countries too that have it? To me, that just means hypocritical, okay? That's how I feel, all right? So timeline, right? So let me just do a little timeline of what we just spoke about, right? So in 1948, Israel is founded. Iran under Shah becomes one of the few Muslim majority countries to quietly recognize and cooperate with Israel. 1950s to the 1970s, the era of quiet partnership. Iran and Israel worked together through intelligence, trade, especially oil, and infrastructure development, united by shared enemies like Arab nationalism and Soviet influence. In 1979, Islamic revolution in Iran, the Ayatollah Khomeini overthrows the Shah and transforms Iran into a theocratic Islamic Republic. Iran cuts all ties with Israel and shifts to an openly hostile and anti-Zionist stance. The 1980s to the 1990s, the rise of the proxy conflict. Iran built up Hezbollah in Lebanon and later supports Hamas. Israel faces a growing threat not directly from Iran, but from Iranian-backed militants across the region. In the 2000s, cyber war and covert strikes. Tensions rise as Israel allegedly assassinates Iranian nuclear scientists, and both countries engage in cyber attacks, including the groundbreaking Stuxnet virus. 2010s to the 2020s, the nuclear standoff. Iran's nuclear program dominates headlines. 2015, Obama signs the JCPOA, which we're going to get into later. Nuclear deal. 2018, Trump withdraws. 2021 to 2023, Biden tries but fails to revise the deal. 2025, Iran nuclear capability near weapons grade. Israel and the U.S. consider military action, right? Today, the region stands on the edge of political global conflict. Iran, Israel, and the allies are engaged in cyber war, covert strikes, and open threats, with Russia and China in the background, and World War III on everyone's lips. So right now, people are talking about maybe there could be a World War III. You know what I mean? I know lately, since Iran has bombed a nuclear base, right? Now, about a week ago, last week sometime, Iran had bombed a nuclear base. But according to the news, they did give the United States heads up, right? When they bombed the military base. But now, they're supposed to be at a ceasefire. So, do we really believe that there will be a ceasefire? Or is just acting right now, right? Do we trust Iran to really have the ceasefire? Do you think that's going to happen? Only time will tell, right? We're going to see. So now, Iran nuclear program and global diplomacy, right? Iran nuclear ambitions. Threat to Israel, but Gulf state and global security. Israel, Iran's top rhetorical and ideological enemy. Iran has vowed to wipe Israel off the map. Think about it, right? Iran said, look, I'm going to get rid of y'all somewhere or another. I'm going to wipe y'all butts off the map. And Israel sees a nuclear Iran as an existential threat. Israel's officials have said they will act unilaterally if needed to stop Iran from acquiring a bomb. So the Gulf states, Sunni Arab nations like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain fear a shite nuclear-armed Iran. They've already been targeted by Iranian proxies, like the Houthi rebels in Yemen, and the nuclear umbrella will embolden Iran even more. So global security, right? A nuclear Iran will likely spark conflict flashpoints, economic instability, especially if Iran threatens to close the Strait of Hormuz and new nuclear arms races, possibly involving Turkey, Egypt, or even Japan if they feel threatened. So arms raced in the Middle East, right? Boy, there's so much information. There's a lot to be said about these nations. So, if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, other regional powers won't sit back. Saudi Arabia had already hinted it will pursue its own nuclear program in response. Other countries like Egypt or Turkey might do the same, fearing Iran's rising power. The Middle East would go from a tense but manageable conflict zone to a region with multiple nuclear armed states, increasing risk of catastrophic war by even accident or miscalculation. This is why world powers from the US to Russia and China have all different priority points, try to prevent Iran from crossing that time. So now let's talk about the Obama era, right? The JCPOA. So the JCPOA stand for Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The formal name of the Iran nuclear deal signed in July 2015. So the deal structure, P5 plus one, country plus one country, or countries plus Iran. The deal was negotiated between Iran and the P5 plus one, which refers to the five permanent members of UN Security Council: United States, United Kingdom, France, Russia, China, plus the one in Germany. These world powers came together to limit Iran's nuclear program in exchange for lifting economic sanctions. What Iran gave up? To assure the world it was not pursuing a nuclear weapon, Iran made several major concessions. Centrifuge reduction. Centrifuge are machines used to enrich uranium. Iran had tens of thousands of centrifuges before the deal. Under the JCPOA, Iran had to cut its numbers of active centrifuges by two-thirds, leaving only about 5,060 for limited enrichment. Limits on your uranium stockpile, right? So Iran agreed to reduce its uranium stockpile by 98%. Limited it to just 300 kilograms, far below what would be needed to make a bomb. This drastically extended the breakout time, the time it would take Iran to build a nuclear weapon, estimated to be over 1 year under the deal. So the UN inspections, Iran had to allow comprehensive and continuous monitoring by the internal automatic energy agency, right? So the internal automatic energy agency. Inspections were granted access to key facilities, supplies, chains, and storage locations to verify compliance. What did Iran receive, right? So in return, Iran was promised several economic and diplomatic benefits. Sanctions relief. Western power lifted many of the crippling economic sanctions that had devastated Iran's economic, particularly in banking, oil, and oil export and global trade. Iran regained access to frozen assets abroad, estimated at over $100 billion. With sanctions lifted, foreign investment returned, inflation dropped, and the economy started to grow again. Damn. So once sanctions are lifted, Iran's economy started to grow, right? European companies, especially from Europe, from France and Germany, rushed in to make deals in oil, aviation, and constructions. So the re-entry into the global trade. Iran was allowed back into the international banking system, including SWIFT, which processed global financial transactions. It could now sell oil legally with technology and participate in global markets after years of isolation. So now, right, the JCPOA was designed to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, at least for the next 10 to 15 years. In exchange, Iran would get economic breathing room. Supporters called it a diplomatic breakthrough. Critics said it rewarded a dangerous regime and only delayed the problem. So now, let's talk about Trump era, right? So Trump withdrawal in 2018, right? So why Trump called it a bad deal? When President Donald Trump took office, he was a vocal critic of the Iran deal and calling it the worst deal ever negotiated, and here's why. So sunset clauses, key restrictions on Iran's nuclear program will expire in 10 to 15 years, meaning Iran could legally expand its nuclear activities after threat. No restriction on missiles. The deal did not address Iran's ballistic missile program, which could potentially be used to deliver nuclear warheads. No limits on terrorism. Trump criticized the deal for ignoring Iran's support for terrorism groups like Hezbollah, Hamas, and Shiite militias. Economic withdrawals. Windfall, I should say. Trump argued that the Iran used a billion in sanctions relief not to help the people, but to fund terrorism and expand regional influence, right? In short, Trump believed that JCPOA only delayed the nuclear threat while empowering Iran military and economically. So maximum pressure on campaign, right? So after withdrawing from the deal on May 8, 2018, Trump launched the maximum pressure campaign, a comprehensive strategy to cripple the economically and force it back to the table under the tougher terms. So reimposed sanctions. The U.S. reimposed all sanctions that had been lifted under the JCPOA and added new ones, targeted Iran's oil exports, cut it off its most vital revenue stream. Dang. Sanctions Iran's banking sector, making it nearly impossible to do business internationally. Blacklisted individuals and companies tied to the Revolutionary Guard and Iranian leadership. This caused Iran's economic to shrink. Inflation to skyrocket, and its currency to lose massive value. So everything that that Trump did, right, caused Iran's economy to shrink. Okay, so he put back all the sanctions back on, right? So when Obama lifted the sanctions and made the JCPOA deal, Trump did not like that one bit. So it makes you wonder, did Trump did not really like that, or is it because it was because of Obama? Huh? Was it because of that? That's how I feel. Okay? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And even think about from back then too, how one time Iran was like likely allies. Think about it. These two nations were allies. They were once friends. And when one man decided to, you know, I'm going to overthrow the government at the time in the 70s, decide once they overthrow that government, they decide to say, the one man decided to say, We do not want to be friends with Israel. I don't like how they think. I don't like what their political stances are. I don't like none of that crap. So guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to not be your friend, and I'm be your enemy. And I'm going to destroy you in the process, right? I'm going to destroy you. You know what I mean? And America need to stay out of our business. We don't like America. That's what these people are saying. You know what I mean? And if America tried to come after us or do anything to us when it comes to war, we're going to retaliate, and it's going to be 50 times worse. That's what those people are thinking. Okay? That's what they are thinking. Iran, you know what I mean, think of America as the enemy. Iran think of Israel as the enemy. Okay, so what do y'all think? You know what I mean? Now, do y'all think that we're going to be at the brink of a war? Do you think that with all that's going on, that is going to be in World War, we're going to have a World War III? Do you think that the United States is going to send troops overseas to die? Do you think? No, we do that type of stuff. And you start thinking about, right? Will the United States send troops overseas to die on a lie? Huh? Just like weapons of mass destruction when George Bush was president. Up to this day, there was no WMD. Okay? There was no WMD, weapon of mass destructions. Okay? So that was a lie, and many troops died. Okay, I was in Iraq. I went there twice. And many troops died while I was overseas because of a daggone lie. Huh? That is how I feel, okay? But I'll tell you this right now. There's so much more information from this thing, right? A lot more information. So I will have to continue this in next week's episode, okay? All right, I will have to continue this because it's too much, right? So we don't know what's going to happen within a week between Iran and Israel and the United States. We don't know. But I'm hoping and praying that everything will be calm, cool, calm, collected, okay? Nothing happened, all right? Until then, thank you for tuning into Common Ground. Until next time, keep the conversation going.
You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.